How you feel, fella? Yeah. You're getting down. Come here. We're gonna have a bump, good time. 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 Let's take them up, friend. Everybody, welcome to the latest edition of the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show with your hosts Michael Robinson and Ricky Hampton, columnists for the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com website, coming to you on a brutally cold Tuesday in Detroit. I don't know what it's like out there for you in the Bay Area, Mike, but we are in the deep freeze here, man.
Yeah,
Mike,
well,
there.
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, it's funny you mention that because I just watched the weather and they were, you know, showing some type of affinity for I don't want to say affinity, some type of sympathy for the Midwest and other areas up north, and talking about how it's a almost pretty much a 100-degree difference when we're here in the 50s and 60s. Yeah, we're in the 50s and 60s, and it's like below 20
yeah.
and stuff like that, you know, especially in my area, Chicago, when Racine area, it's, in Minneapolis, just absolutely brutal. So, and I remember
those days,
and I know it's bad.
It's bad, man. I'm hunkered down, but I got my hot chocolate, going to get the fireplace going, and got my lovely wife to help me stay warm on this evening, man. But, Mike, you know what I've been watching, man. And let me just tell everybody, we're going to be joined in a few minutes. A good friend of mine, Dwight Lewis, former reporter for the Tennessean, one of the first black reporters to take on a major beat at the Tennessean and probably in the South, has written a book about the TSU Tiger Bell. And, Mike, I know you being an alumnus of the Big Blue will be happy to talk to, be interested in talking to Dwight about that. And later in the show, Derek Gervin's going to check in, and we're going to talk a little NBA, man, and see what Derek thinks about the possible trade destinations for Anthony Davis. And, you know, it's Super Bowl week, so we definitely got to get our football talk in tonight. But, Mike, I have been watching the Milwaukee Bucks. They're in town playing the Pistons, and I guess our good buddy Marcus Johnson is here for the game tonight, who we hope to have on the show real soon. The Bucks are good. The Pistons are playing really good game, and they're down 15 points in the fourth quarter. And, no, they're playing well. I mean, Milwaukee's good,
right,
man.
Yeah, but you know what? Milwaukee just laid an egg, though. So, you know, they kind of got brought down to earth. They put like a wall up to keep the Greek Freak out of the lane. And they were blocking his shot. I think they blocked his shot 7 times. So he kind of got exposed that game. I forgot who it was against. But
was that
just,
Boston?
You know, they, no, I don't think it was Boston because Boston just played Golden State. I think it was somebody came to town, and it might have been – could have been Denver, maybe. It might have been Denver. I think Denver might have come to town and kind of embarrassed them. So, even though they've had the best record for a moment, and they're doing really well in the East, and, of course, I don't think that makes Jason Kidd and those guys feel too good because, like, they couldn't really get it over the hump. Or now, what's his, Bodenholzer? He's got these guys playing on a different level. And especially, you know, if he helps elevate the Antetokounmpo's game. Let me try to say his name instead of saying Greek Freak. But if he tries to elevate his game.
I'm going to let you have that, brother.
I actually did. It's funny. I actually did meet and interview him. And it was the last time I really covered a Warriors game before this year. It was back in 15 before all that started. So they were playing the Bucks. So I had a chance to talk to him. And then I just kind of moseyed over by the Warriors locker room, and Steph was still in there. I said, whoa, okay. So I talked to Steph because Steph had hit like three big three-pointers to elevate them. And this is before the championship run. That was the same year of their first one, but this is before everybody knew that this was going to happen. So it was just still see them kind of humble and all that stuff. But now, I don't know. You know, especially now picking up Boogie, I think they really, really got a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah, they they are certainly a formidable, formidable team. But you know, it's good to see a franchise like Milwaukee have success, man. And the East, I mean, they could come out of the East. I mean, you know, Philly's beatable, Boston's beatable.
But you know what, though?
Think about it, Mike. They had Boston. Weren't they up 2-0?
That's exactly. It was seven games, and they just couldn't win in Boston. And
they went seven games.
Right. That's what was so frustrating is that that they would look so well at home, then they go on the road. I'm like, dude, just play the same way. This team is not that good. I was just so frustrated. I said, this team is not that good. And, of course, Bledsoe was getting embarrassed by Scary Terry. You know, he had a coming-out party against the Bucks. I mean, he was just lighting him up.
You know,
I mean, come on, Bledsoe. So
I never had a chance to cover games in the old Boston Garden. But I was up there when the Pistons were in the playoffs at TD. And that's still a very difficult place to play. The fans are just absolutely crazy. They love the Celtics up there. So that's a tough environment, especially for a team that young. But I tell you what, man, Boston, as of now, would have to go to Milwaukee if it comes down. And they meet up in a series because you know, Milwaukee has the best. They have the best record in the league right now. So, hey, but we're gonna talk some more NBA later in the show. But right now, let me go to my thing here and make this grand introduction. Somebody I looked up to as a kid in Nashville, and one of the reasons I went into the newspaper business, Dwight Lewis, the author of Temple Tiger Bells and the Pride of the Big Blue. How you doing, Dwight? You're on with Michael Robinson.
How you doing?
TSU alumni and Ricky Hampton.
How you doing, Michael and Ricky? Thank you all for having me. And Ricky, you're so kind.
Well, that's the truth, Dwight. I mean, you were the first black man I'd ever seen covering big events in the newspaper. What was the trap? Before we get into your book, talk a little bit about your career as a newspaper man in the South, and the famous trial, was it the James Earl Ray trial that you covered?
No, I covered James Earl Ray. I wrote about him, but I didn't cover his, you know, he ended up pleading guilty. But I wrote about him while he was in prison, interviewed him several times.
What were your impressions of James Earl Ray? And for our younger audience, I hope you know this, James Earl Ray was convicted of assassinating Dr. Martin Luther King in 1968. What was that like, Dwight, interviewing James Earl Ray?
You know, well, I think James Earl Ray was a hardened criminal. Toward the end of his life, I thought he was going to confess. And you know, he went so far as to say, if that was a rifle with my fingerprints on it, it was mine, I bought it. But what he said toward the end of his life, right at the end of his life, was if they're waiting for a deathbed confession, they weren't going to get it from him. He was a hardened criminal. He was just a hardened criminal.
Wow.
So he so he's basically saying that he was a scapegoat there.
Yeah, he just wouldn't admit it. Up until the end, he called, he wanted to talk, and I said he's going to confess, and he would not do it. He was even stabbed by some inmates one time up at Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary in Petros, Tennessee, and he knew who did it. He would not tell on him. He would not squeal on him.
Wow.
Hmm.
Wow. And he escaped out of there one time, too.
For a day or two, escaped on a Friday and was caught on a Sunday afternoon, late Sunday afternoon.
What year was that?
Get out of the mountain. That was 1977.
Okay.
June of 1977.
So as you got to know this guy over the years, did you, any redeeming qualities about the man, Dwight? What do you think about when somebody asks you about James Earl Ray?
I just tell him that I thought he was the lone assassin. I think he thought he was going to get some money for killing Dr. King, and yeah, he didn't. I don't think he got any.
Wow,
That's
amazing. And just one of the adventures of your amazing career in journalism. Were there very many? I already know the answer to this, but how was it being a young black man in the South, in the newspaper business, and what was that like? And what made you want to go into journalism, Dwight?
Well, you know, Ricky and Michael, growing up, I wanted to be a Major League Baseball player. I wanted to be a Jackie Robinson or Roy Campanella, but I couldn't hit the ball. Yeah, I played in college, played at Tennessee State. But when I was in high school, I didn't play varsity basketball. I played junior varsity, and I didn't play football. But I would call in the scores of our high school games to the two Knoxville newspapers, the Knoxville News Sentinel was the afternoon paper. Knoxville Journal was the morning paper. And I got paid a little money for doing that.
Mm.
And so I came to Tennessee State and went – started, you know, I worked on a student newspaper in addition to playing baseball.
Wow. Did you before you joined the Tennessee, did you do freelance for them?
No, I stayed in school a little longer than I should have because I partied too much and played ball and worked on a student newspaper. So I got a little late. And so I went from Tennessee State straight into the Tennessean.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. And you actually went to grad school up here, didn't you, Dwight, down the road in Ann Arbor, University of Michigan?
Yeah, I had a 1981-82 school year I spent on a National Endowment for the Humanities Fellowship for Journalists at the U of M.
Okay, so you know what some of these cold nights are like up here, man.
Let me tell you, I was 82. Super Bowl weekend, you know, Super Bowl weekend this weekend.
Oh, that was, that's right.
Super Bowl weekend. It was the Bengals and San Francisco playing up in Pontiac.
Yep.
It was
right.
So cold.
Right.
I got depressed that weekend. It was so cold.
well, look, man, we got you here. You got a great new book out. I hadn't had a chance to read it yet, but I will get my hands on it. Temple's Tiger Bells. And, man, during my days at the Nashville Banner, I had a chance to get to know Coach Temple and cover the Tiger Bells. And he was just an extraordinary man and a delightful man to talk to. What made you decide to take this project on, Dwight?
You know, back in 1983, Susan Thomas, who co-authored this book with me, we published another book called A Will to Win, and it's about Tennessee State's athletic history. And I played baseball at Tennessee State, so I would see some of the, you know, the athletes, Wilmer Tyus, Madeline Manning, just some of the great track stars. But there was a fellow, and I forget his name, who wrote the Black History of Pennsylvania. Back in 1979, he was here in Nashville, and he was at Fest, and I interviewed him. And before I got through interviewing him, about the time I got through interviewing him, he just asked me a question. Why hasn't anyone written a book about Tennessee State's athletic history? Such a great history. And we decided to work on a Will to Win then. But this book, back in 2002, and I've had it on my mind since 2002, there was a reunion of Tiger Bells. And I taped the conversations between the coach and just what the Tiger Bells were saying. It was a Saturday morning. It started out at Tennessee State. And that night they were honored before a Nashville Predators hockey game downtown. And okay. Just the stories, and you hear Coach Temple talk about the stories and what they went through and how they traveled in the early days, how they had to leave at night and along the way sometimes couldn't stop. Couldn't go in the main hotels and had to stop along the way and hit the woods to use the restroom sometimes. But how he liked for them to look like ladies after they got through running. So I just decided, I said, it would be great to illustrate such a project.
Yeah. To get someone to
do an illustration. And we have this fellow named James Thrillkill, who's really, really good.
Oh, yeah, I know Thrillkill. And Thrillkill played football at Bandy, I believe.
He did. Nashville. He's a great artist. So, yeah, so he's done the illustrations for the book. And the book, Ricky and Michael, features the women, the Tiger Bells, who won Olympic medals. And over the years, during Coach Temple's time, from 1956 through just 94, when Chandra Cheese was the last medal winner, we won 23 Olympic medals, 13 gold, 6 silver, and 4 bronze medals.
That's just crazy.
So, Dwight.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Now, I went down there in 85, and I was actually a track star back in Wisconsin, and I thought about running for Coach Temple, and actually my roommate, who was from Milwaukee, ran for him. But I wanted to play basketball more, so I tried to be a walk-on. But what was it like for the men, like Ralph Boston, that was, won 3 consecutive medals, gold, silver, and bronze, in 3 different Olympics? So what was it like for the guys that were on that team when all the women are getting the attention and they couldn't be called Tiger Bells? So what was it like for them?
Well, they had men coaches back then.
And so
Ralph came here. He came to run under not Coach Temple, but under someone else. And Ralph tells the story that when he first went down on the track, when he first got here, he moved a hurdle, and said Coach Temple hollered at him, "Oh, buddy, put it back the way you found it when you leave." He ended up traveling some because Ralph was the only star male track athlete. He traveled some with the Tiger Bells. He was like a brother to them.
Right. Okay. Right. And you know what, man? Coach Temple gave me the best quote I ever got as a reporter. I was doing a feature on it for something, and he was talking about, he said, I got the greatest job in the world. My wife lets me run around with fast women and doesn't say anything. No, I get to run around with fast women every day, and my wife doesn't care.
Yeah, that was good. There was a track star, an Olympian, Barbara Jones. Her married name is Slater. She lives in Atlanta. She was from Chicago. She made her first Olympic team in 1952 at 15 years of age, and then went to Marquette and made the 56th Olympic team at Marquette. But she got hurt and couldn't run. And when she came back from the Olympics in Melbourne, she they had cut out track at Marquette, and her mother called Coach Temple because Barbara had run some against the Tiger Bells and said, Coach, Barbara is available, and he said, put her on the train tomorrow from Chicago, where she was from, and she came to Tennessee State. But she says one thing, she said, just think, Coach Temple, there were nothing but divas. You know, Wilma, Mayfax, and that group, nothing but divas. It was just amazing that Coach Temple was able to be around all those divas and handle them.
That is true, man. I never thought about that. Yeah.
You know, could you as a man do that?
No way in the world. Huh? What do you think was the secret of Dwight?
Well, I think he was I think President Davis, Walter S. Davis, who hired him, felt that he could trust Coach Temple. And Ricky, I don't know, Michael, I don't know if you all ever met Samuel Abernathy, who came here in about 1950 to go to Tennessee State. He drove some for Coach Temple. And when Coach Temple hired him, asked him to drive, he said, I know I can trust you not to mess with the women, not to mess with the Tiger Bells. So, you know, they had to have that trust.
Yeah. I knew Coach Abernathy, sure did. I mean, was it the 56th U.S. Olympic team, Dwight, that was comprised of all Tiger Bells?
Well, no.
No,
60. The 60 team had 7 Tiger Bells.
Right.
But the 56th team, you know, had Wilma. It was, you know, he would take some high school girls. Wilma was still in high school.
Right.
She, you know, they won the bronze medal. Willie White won a bronze medal. You know, that's a great story. And one of the stories in the book, Willie White, who came here from Greenwood, Mississippi in 56, and she was still a high school student, won an Olympic medal, came back in 1958, and she was a beautiful woman. She was a beautiful woman. She came back in 58 to come to college, to go be in college. But she would break curfew. Coach Timberson called her red, he said, because you never knew what color her hair would be from day to day. But she's from Greenwood, Mississippi. And she told me, you know, she was used to running with older guys. And when she had to have a curfew here, they told her she had a curfew, she would break it. And finally, Coach Temple told her, as good as she was, Red, this school is not big enough for both of us, and one of us got to go. And I'm not going anywhere. And he put her head out of school.
And what's so funny, I could just hear Coach saying that. You know, he was not one to bite his tongue at all. Well, let me get everybody caught up here. You're listening to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show with Michael Robinson and Ricky Hampton, columnists for the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com website. And we have our guest here, Dwight Lewis, author of Temple's Tiger Bells and a legendary journalist for the Nashville, Tennessee newspaper. Go ahead, Mike.
All right. Yeah, so Dwight, when they made that movie about Wilma, and they actually had Jason Bernard playing Temple and then a kind of unknown young lady playing Wilma, and then Denzel Washington kind of had his debut playing Wilma's boyfriend during the high school years. And a lot of people don't realize Paulette, his now wife, played one of the Tiger Bells. So did you ever see that movie, and how accurate is it to the story that you actually got and wrote down on paper?
I think it's pretty accurate, but, you know, one of the things you're talking about who played, you know, Wilma had a tough time back then. She was married to a former basketball player at Tennessee State.
Right.
And he would abuse her sometimes. And, you know, Coach Temple did – in fact, right before the movie was aired or played in the theater, Bell Mead Theater, he abused his Wilma. And Coach Temple had to help her get her face right so people wouldn't see that.
Wow. And
Coach Temple liked it. His name was Robert Elridge, heck of a basketball player.
He was
a coach
from
Clarksville. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Dwight, what was the deal? Did Muhammad Ali always have a thing for Wilma? I always heard that story. Did you get any detail on that as you that worked on this project?
Well, there is a new documentary that came out last spring, February, Black History Month. And let me the title is Mr. Temple and the Tiger Bells. And the people who produced it, they got a chance to interview Coach Temple before he died. And he talked about how Muhammad Ali came to Nashville to see Wilmer. You know, they met in the 1960 Olympics at Rome. And they got, and I guess you might say, a little thing for each other. And at least they were good friends. And Ali came here one time in a Lincoln or a Cadillac. And they said, Coach, Muhammad Ali is here. And the coach said, no, he can't be here. And true enough, he had come to town to see Wilmer.
But think about, those Wilmer and Muhammad, they are just iconic figures in that time during the 60s. The white, where, you know, black athletes are not only excelling on the field, but, we got the civil rights movement going on, and that was a little bit before my time. What was that like? I remember it a little bit as a young kid, having sisters who were involved in some of that stuff.
Yeah, but and the Tiger Bells didn't get, one of the things that Wilmer did after she got back from the 60 Olympics, they wanted to have a parade for her in her hometown of Clarksville.
Right.
But they were going to just, let whites be in the main area. But Wilmer said she wanted everybody there. She wanted everybody to see what she had done. And so, she spoke up about that.
Wow. Yeah.
One of the things about Coach Temple, if you weren't on time, he would leave you or he would punish you. And I was out at watching Chandra Cheeseborough. She coaches the Tiger Bells as well as the men's track team now, and she was getting on some of them yesterday about being late. Chandra was telling me, said she saw up with about 70 athletes running track this year, and now she's down to 40. She said they just, some of them just couldn't handle the prep, couldn't handle. They were dropping off like flies.
Right. Wow.
And didn't they have the song "So Hard to Be a Tiger"? Yes.
Tiger Bell. Yeah.
Yeah. Tiger Bell.
I remember that as a kid. Hey, Dwight, where can people get a copy of the book?
Well, the book will be available. Amazon and other places, you can order it starting February the 25th. We're going to have a book signing here in Nashville on February 24th, and then on the 25th it will be out to the public, to everybody. People can order it. And we hope to have signings in other places. We'd love to come to Detroit.
Absolutely. You know what? I will talk to you some about that, Dwight, and see if we can make that happen. And to our listeners out there, we will put a copy of the book. We'll put a little ad about the book on our website in our library of books. Dwight, on our website, we like to put up some of the books that we think would be important and fun to read regarding African American athletes and issues of the African American community. Hey, Dwight, speaking of, you've been a longtime journalist in the Nashville area. We found some video the other day of Eldridge Dickey, and we put it up on the African American Athlete website. And then he was an extraordinary football player who was eventually drafted in the first round by the Oakland Raiders in 1968, and they eventually moved him to they put him to wide receiver right off. And, I think in a way he was a victim of his own skills because he was just so good doing everything. And he was a victim of his times, too. If you look at that film, it's no doubt this man would be a top 10 pick in an NFL draft coming out today. Can you tell us a little bit about your thoughts about Dickey and that time for black quarterbacks?
You know, when I came to Tennessee State, Ricky, I came here in 1965, came to Nashville in 1965 from Knoxville. And the first person I tell people now, you know, I say, well, who's the president of Tennessee State? But I tell people the first person I wanted to see when I got here was Elrich Dickey. His nickname, he had, one of his nicknames was the Lord's Prayer. He could throw it with his right hand. He could throw it with his left hand. And, you know, that was the time, for the most part, it was still, you know, segregation still, you know, existed as far as major white schools in the South. And Dickey was from Houston. And they found, and one of the things they, one of the stories about Dickey, he came here and he wanted to go back home to see his girlfriend. This is 1964, 65, 64. And there was an assistant coach named Shannon Little. And they were scared if they let Dickey go back home to Houston by himself, he wouldn't come back. University of Houston would try to get him, or Southern University or Texas Southern. And Coach Little said, well, Dickey, I have to go to Houston this weekend, and I'll give you a ride. And he took him and brought him back to make sure they wouldn't lose it. You know, but they had a heck of a team, you know, heck of a team. Dickey was great. And the film that you all, I was watching it today, that you all have, is a 1965 game when they were playing Ball State in the Grantland Rice Bowl up in Murfreesboro.
Right.
And you know, the game ended in a tie. But Dickey was great. You know, Dickey, they had Nolan Smith, Supernat, who went on to play with Kansas City. Bill Tucker, who went on to play with the 49ers. He was a running back. William Bill Tucker. Franklin McRae, who went on to play with the Chicago Bears. Johnny Robinson, who played with the Detroit or with the Lions. John Robinson, who played with Green Bay. They had a great, great team. They would have whipped Tennessee's butt back then. Some team like that.
And also on that team, Claude Humphrey, who would go on to become an NFL
Hall of Fame.
Hall of Famer. And if you look at that team, Claude played left tackle and defensive tackle. He was so good.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was good. And, you know, they kidnapped Claude Humphrey. Claude will tell you they kidnapped him after he came to Tennessee State. They started telling about some of the other guys who were really good. And Claude was going to leave and go to Murray State. And little Joe Gillum, who went on to play with Pittsburgh, was in high school back then. And Joey told his daddy, who was an assistant coach, and they took Claude's clothes and took him over to one of the coaches' house. And every time Claude wanted to change clothes, he had to go to the coach's house until he got dressed for school.
That's hilarious. You know, we had Claude on the show, I think it was last year, and he talked about, we asked him about Elrich Dickey, and he said Elrich Dickey was the best, not only the best quarterback he ever played for, he said Elrich Dickey was the best football player that he ever saw. Now, you're talking about a guy who's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and that's how much he thought about Elrich Dickey.
Yeah, Dickey was good. You know, Dickey was great. They had a great team. But like I said, his nickname, we called the Lord's Prayer.
Houston, Texas. Yes, sir. Well, Dwight, man, we really appreciate you stopping in to talk to us about Temple's Tiger Bells. And to our listeners out there, just check the website, AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, and we'll get information up regarding the book and Dwight. Hopefully we can get you up here in the Motor City, man, because, you know, there's a strong TSU contingent here.
Oh, yeah.
And
sure.
So hopefully we can organize
something. And I'm on the Bay Area, so if you're ever out here, definitely on the Bay Area. But, Ricky, let me get one more question in.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So, Dwight, did you ever get a chance to have a one-on-one conversation or even meet Wilma?
Yes, I got a chance to meet Wilma several times. Got a chance one time I forget. It was in the 19 I was working on the book Will to Win, and okay. I ended up going to Clarksville to try to talk to her, and so she said, "Well, I can't talk. I'm going to see my son run track, but I got to go out of town tomorrow. Why don't you give me a ride to the airport?" And I drove back up there to take her to the airport, dropped her off at the airport, and when I got home, I lived about 20 miles away, 15 miles away. I get a call from her. She said, "You made me miss my plane, so why don't you come and take me to Huntsville where I have to give a speech?" And but she had left her ticket at home.
Oh,
and
okay.
So I went, came back, went to the airport, picked her up, took her down to Huntsville, and stayed while she gave her speech, and then brought her back to Nashville. She
wow.
loved Coach Temple. She loved Coach Temple. Coach Temple was with her, you know, the day she was, you know, she was dying. But she
wow.
loved Coach Temple. Her whole family loved Coach Temple. And Wilmer told me he graded him. I said, Wilmer was his highest ranking Tiger Bell.
Oh,
and she was the one she was an A+, but but Tyus ranked up there too. Romney
right.
Tyus, he said,
yeah,
Romney well, did an A+ too.
Yeah.
But see, they thought either McGuire was going to take Wilmer's place, but it was a lot of pressure on McGuire. And
mm-hmm.
Tyus came in in 64, won the 100-yard dash in the 100-meter dash, but McGuire came back and won the 200-meter.
Right.
And so just Coach Temple, he loved – let me tell you, in fact, and I know you we have to go, but he loved all his Tiger Bells, the way he treated them. Mandy Manning, you all need to have her on this show sometimes. She had some problems. She had a child, got married, had a child, left school, and he called her in Ohio. "Maddie, how are you doing?" She said, "Coach, I'm not doing too good." And he said, "What's wrong?" And she told him. She said, "Well, why don't you come back to school?" She said, "Well, I have to run." He said, "No, just come on back and get your degree. You need your degree." And she just tell you how much he cared for her. How much he cared for all the Tiger Bears.
Right.
Yeah, he was a remarkable man. It is no doubt
yep.
about it.
Right.
His wife.
And,
yeah.
I was fortunate during my time covering Tennessee State to get to know him a little bit. Were you going to say something else to Wyatt?
No, I just thank you all very much for having me, and we'll get you all a copy of Temple's Tiger Bells, an illustrated history of the women who outran the world.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and we're gonna get you back on, man, at a later date after you guys get out, start touring around with the book, and talk, because we could do a whole hour on not only the Tiger Bells but the legacy of TSU athletics and its importance. And the importance of not only TSU, but all the HBCUs in the world of sports and beyond.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, let me just end with this. We have to tell our stories, because if we don't tell our stories, who will?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I got a quick interjection, Ricky. So,
yes, sir.
88, I'm the sports editor for the Meter at the time, so, of course, I know you know about that. I'm the sports editor of the Meter, and I was in the studio or in the room, and I had to finish this story because I'm the sports editor, and they said Wilma's over there talking to the Tiger Bells. I said, "Oh man, I need to go over there and meet her, man." You know, I would love to meet Wilma, but I had to finish what I was doing. And then by the time I got done, she was gone, and I never met her. And she ended up dying, but in the 90s sometime, and I to this
94.
Day regret that. I should have stopped what I was doing. And just gone over there and met that woman. I really regret that.
Yeah, those deadlines, man. We as newspaper reporters, we've all had to meet them and had to make some tough choices. So,
yep. Sure.
But Dwight, thank you very much, man.
Thank you all.
Us,
thank you, Michael and Ricky.
Okay, and I'll be in touch with you, man.
Okay. Take care. See you
all.
All
right. That was Dwight Lewis, longtime reporter for the Nashville Tennessean and author of Temple's Tiger Bells. And one of the guys, as I was a young man thinking about what I was going to do with my life, looked up to you know, seeing a black man in the newspaper writing was really important. Now, he was not writing sports at that time, but just seeing him was certainly important to me. But we're going to go right to our guest line and bring in our good friend and the host of Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets basketball podcast, the one and only Mr. Derek Gervin. D, what's up, man? You on with Mike and Rick on the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com radio show.
Hey, good evening. How you doing, Rick? How you doing, Mike?
All right, chilling.
Hey, man, I'm sure glad you could call in tonight. And, you know, with all the stuff going down with Anthony Davis over the weekend, he wants to be traded. And, you know, people are getting on him because he's saying he wants to be traded. But this is the way professional basketball is today. These guys got a chance to dictate their own fate, where in before it was opposite, where the ownership dictated one's fate. What do you think about Davis' statement on being traded, and where you think of some of the destinations for?
Well, I think he's been very patient. I mean, he's been there 7 years. You haven't heard any grumblings whatsoever. So I think he's handled the situation well. It's gotten to the point now where he's still young, but it's to the point now you want to win. So I think he's making a good decision for himself. He deserves to go out and try to be on the winning team, and I'm happy for him. You know, L.A.'s waiting on it.
Well, that answers that question,
well,
Mike.
Well, he got a $50,000 fine for making that demand. So, I mean, I'm sure he can absorb that if he does make it out to La La Land. But, you know, I mean, it's funny how certain people, they get on about doing this, whereas other players do it. They say, yeah, you know, because think about it. When Kyrie did it, it was like, well, he probably wants to get away from LeBron. So they somehow made that LeBron's fault that he wanted to leave. And now we got Anthony saying this, and then, you know, it's like, well, hey, what is he thinking about? Especially because he might end up with LeBron. So once again, it's going to be, well, this is LeBron's fault. LeBron's tampering. So it's amazing how LeBron ends up being the scapegoat on a lot of these scenarios.
Hey, you know what? I did see a thing the other day. You know, these memes can be hilarious. And it was a picture of LeBron, and he was looking at a stat sheet or something, just minding his own business, really.
Oh, yeah. He's been looking at it.
And the thing
and
said,
somebody, yeah.
And the thing said, LeBron's looking. I can't get it out. And Derek, it's a picture of LeBron in uniform. He's looking at the paper. It's probably a stat sheet. But the meme said, LeBron looking at who he's going to trade for Anthony Davis.
Well,
and Hart was next to him. I think Hart was, Josh Hart was next to him.
Hey, can I say this, Ricky? I'm glad you brought
man.
That up, Mike. Because I think, you know, everybody's talking about Boston. I don't even think, I think he's the teams he's interested in are the Lakers or the Knicks. Anthony, he did say he would entertain the Knicks. And if you look at the Lakers, the only person I can't see leaving would be Josh Hart. So I'm glad you brought that up, because I actually just wrote a post on Facebook, a little short thing, and I said to me the only two that were untouchable were LeBron and Josh Hart. And I say that because if you go back to the summer league, LeBron was actually going, sitting down at the games watching the Lakers play. And he became a big fan of Josh Hart. I'm a big fan of Josh Hart.
Yeah,
so I
think like
they would let two. Yeah, all other guys I think are expendable. The only guy I could see not leaving would be Josh Hart.
Okay,
well,
I'm gonna put the GM cap on both of you guys. Mike, if you're in LA, what would you dealing for? And then Derek, what would you dealing for? Anthony, what would you give up?
Let me just throw in this first, though. You know, they were saying that Caldwell Pope is also not touchable because of that money that's going to be off the books after the season. and I believe it's like $30 million. So he may not be leaving either. They might hold on to him so they can try to get Kawhi, possibly Kyrie, or somebody else to get in that spot. So if you get Davis and another star player, look out. So, yeah. But, yeah, for me, I say anybody's tradable if you're going to try to get somebody of that magnitude, if you're trying to make some moves. Because they absolutely mess themselves up by saying, well, this player is unavailable, and then that's why you didn't get anybody. You know, you're saying that, well, we got to keep this player, we got to keep this player, instead of saying, hey, look, we got to go for it now. We don't have time. This man may only have 4 years left in his career. You know, and this is before LeBron got there, but they were still trying to woo him, but they couldn't get anybody else to come there. So, and it was partly because they were saying, hey, well, we can only trade this player and this player. And some people say, well, hey, man, you know what? If you're not willing to give up this guy, then we're not interested. So that's why you had some of these top stars that didn't come. So my thing would be, like Derek said, I like Hart, but if push comes to shove and the only way you're going to get Anthony is to put Hart in there, he got to go. So I'm willing to get rid of anybody. And like somebody said on TV, throw Magic in there too. If that's the thing to get Anthony Davis. But that's what I would say. I would say pretty much anybody too.
What about you, Derek? Any combinations?
Well, I would. You basically got to, like Mike said, you got to, if you can get Anthony Davis. Now, here's the thing with me, because I'm skeptical, because Anthony has a little history of injuries.
Yeah.
So I don't want to give up the whole the kitchen sink for Anthony Davis, and then, you know, we turn around and then he gets hurt. If you look at it, he's hurt right now. So, but I'd say for me, I give up. I like Brandon Ingram. But I don't see him progressing as quickly as I thought, and I'm certainly he's not progressing as quickly as the Lakers envision. I would give up Ingram. Lonzo Ball. I would give up all these guys except for Hart. And the reason I say Hart is because he plays with just what his name is. He plays with a lot of heart, and he's the kind of guy that you want on your team. They kind of weak at the guard spot. That's the only reason I say Hart. All your big guys, I like Kuzma, but he's expendable. If I can get AD, I shake Kuzma's hand and I wish him well. I hope he becomes an all-star, which he probably will. But yeah, you got to go, man. Anthony Davis is still young, so I'm looking at next year anyway. You got the reason I take him, Anthony Davis, is because it'll send out a signal to guys like Klay Thompson. I still think there's a chance Klay goes and plays there next year with Anthony Davis and LeBron, and a guy that I love in Portland might be there as well, Damian Lillard.
You can
empty all those other guys out and then rebuild, but you start with Anthony Davis and LeBron.
Yeah.
You know, Klay Thompson's dad played there back in the day, so maybe that could be something on his mind. Say they get him in the next couple of weeks. They give up Ball or Ingram. Say they give up Ball, Ingram, and their draft pick, and you know, you could throw Caldwell Pope in there or somebody. What does does that make them any more dangerous going into the playoffs? Are they capable of beating the Warriors or the Rockets with the addition of Davis, Derek?
No, not this year. No, it's not enough games left. They only have like a little over 30 games left. You have to build that chemistry. If the Lakers are smart, they won't do anything until the summer. That's the smart thing. Don't rush. Don't make the mistakes you made before. Anthony Davis is not the one really in charge. The Pelicans are. So the Lakers are smart. They'll just sit back and relax and then let this play out in the summer, because it's going to be a complex trade either way it goes, whatever happens. So just stay patient and just wait.
However, if they wait to the summer, then Boston can get back in the mix, because the Kyrie scenario is preventing them from doing anything during the trade deadline, because some type of red tape is saying that they can't get a player of Anthony's magnitude because of the Kyrie trade. So
you can't have two guys.
That they,
They're hoping they can wait July 1st. So that's what I'm worried about. If you wait too long, what if the Boston talks them out of it, you know, by giving up their young players in draft picks?
Yeah, you know what? I think these guys, Derek, do you think there'll be a lot of activity at the trade deadline? Or and Mike, I want you to get in on this too. Are teams looking at Golden State saying, you know what, we may as well hold on to these assets because there's nothing we're going to do this year that's going to propel us past Golden State or even give us a chance to compete with them? Do you think some of those conversations are being had, Derek, or should they be being had?
A few teams, the top team, like if you look like a team like Oklahoma City, I think they're still trying to get better. Because if you notice, no one has really talked about Oklahoma City this year. They're like pretty much falling under the radar. And I like their squad. I really like their squad. I'm looking at them right now. I'm looking at New Orleans Pelicans, and I'm looking trying to figure out what is Oklahoma City missing. And what I see is they're missing a perimeter shooter. And then you got a big man. I'm looking at Jahlil Okafor. Man, I can see him sliding in there and playing somewhat, you know, sometime with Steven Adams and then taking, you know, replacing Steven Adams when he goes to the bench. So you got a few teams that won't stand still. I don't know why people just want to give Golden State the championship. We don't even know how Cousins is going to respond as the months go on. He's playing off adrenaline right now, so we don't know how he's going to respond in another week or two or if there's swelling. We don't know any of that. So I'm not giving Golden State the championship, like I said earlier. So, yeah, there are a few teams that are still – that will probably make a few moves at, before the deadline next week.
All right. Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that, Derek, is because he actually was on a fast break because I don't usually watch the Warriors. They just do not excite me, but – I happened to watch it just to see how, DeMarcus would look. And he got there was a steal. Somebody stole a ball. It was a 2-on-1 break, and then he got the ball on the right wing, went to the hole, and then there was a collision. And he came, and he stayed on the ground. Everybody, the broadcast crew, everybody was like, oh, my God. So then he eventually got up, but they gave a flagrant to the guy because he just tried to grab him, you know. He didn't want them to come in dunking on him. But that right there shows you how everybody's still on pins and needles about what's going to happen with him. You know, will he go to the hole and try to do a lift off and something happens? Or will he, you know, get some kind of a scenario where he goes to the hole and steps the wrong way? So that's what you still are worried about. And as I've said during this whole run, every year they have been vulnerable in one of the series. It has been every year they've had a series where they could have easily lost. And for a team to be considered a dynasty, and some people say the greatest ever, I just don't see them as being a dominant factor of that they're going to win. Everybody else just put the ball down, go away. They already give them, you know, already crown them. And I agree with Derek that, you know, somebody could upset them. I mean, if they do play their cards right, and keep attacking. Like I said, Houston was on their way to do it. Houston had them ready to go, and then once Chris Paul pulled up lame, that was it. Then the year before that, once Kawhi landed on dude's foot, that was it. Okay? And then the year before that, they should have been put out by Oklahoma City. Oklahoma City had them 3-1. And nobody gets on Kevin Durant by choking that series. It's always like, well, it was Westbrook's fault. That's the reason why he left. That's why it justifies him going to Golden State. I'm like, that don't justify him. That was weak. You should be mad that you lost to them, a 3-1 lead, come back and beat them, not join them. And then also now you got like, I'm the best player in the league. I mean, really?
Yeah, history's not going to be kind. History will not be kind to him on that.
You want to know what's funny?
Yeah, go ahead.
The great Walt Frazier said that, you know, I got to deduct some points from Kevin Durant for what he did there. And then Steven Jackson, you know, these younger guys going to try to get all up on Walt Frazier, just insult a legend and say, hey, man, he needs to be quiet with his dusty suit. I'm like, are you serious? I said, this dude has
the right to say that this man is a legend, okay? And he got it done in the finals. He didn't go join the team. He was the reason why they won, whereas, you know, he didn't get the credit for having an awesome finals because it all went to
Willis,
the big man
Willis
that got
Reed.
Hurt. Willis Reed, Willis Reed. Willis Reed got all the credit. This man was dominated. So,
you know
your history before you insult a legend. That's what I was mad about.
Well, you do bring up a great name. Derek Clyde was smooth, man. He was a freaking killer out
yep.
there.
On both sides of the court. Both sides, offense and defense.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, and we just got a couple more minutes here. On the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com, we're being joined by our good friend Derek Gervin, host of the Derek Gervin Basketball Podcast. Derek, I had a chance to watch Milwaukee tonight. They came to town and, like everybody else, whooped up on my Pistons. But actually, the Pistons played pretty well and lost by 10 points. I mean, I was really impressed with Milwaukee. And you talk about Oklahoma City being under the radar. I think the Bucks are under the radar, too. Is this team good enough to come out of the East, you think?
They have a good team. I'm just worried about coming down the stretch, the playoffs, playing
mm-hmm.
the same team
yep.
night after night. Once you once you zoom in on Giannis, who else is going to step up? Chris Middleton,
yeah.
It's hard to explain Chris Middleton's game. He's very productive,
right.
but you can also
right.
take him out the game. So, you know, I
yep.
think they're one of the teams that need to trade. They're still lacking.
Yep.
I like Brogdon and all those guys they have, Bledsoe and all that, but they're still, I don't know if they're missing a shooter and a big man. But I still, you know, I have to say right now, I know people are giving Harden the MVP. It's hard for me to overlook Giannis right now when they're 36 or 37-13.
I know.
So, yeah, I'm hoping. Yeah, Milwaukee's, I think they're dangerous, but I think they're a year or two away.
Yeah.
You know what, Ricky, I agree with that. But, you know, that's the same thing I'm saying. It's like, what is the criteria for becoming an MVP? I mean, it changes every year. Because the year that Westbrook won, Harden's team was better. So why didn't he win? And then the following year, you know, Harden wins it, but he had Chris Paul on his team. Like, so how can he really be standout MVP when Chris Paul was in the lineup? Their record was way above 500. And so it's like, could you really solely say he was the most valuable player when he added a Hall of Famer? So, and also Westbrook did the same thing. He averaged a triple-double. So I'm like, what's the criterion to be MVP? And that now Greek Freak has a better team record, and his stats are through the roof too. So why shouldn't he be MVP? So that's what I'm saying about it's like it's almost like they're just shooting into a barrel and saying, like, all right, man, you know what?
Yeah, I mean, this really subjective.
Let's just give it to this dude this year, you know?
Yeah, it's really subjective. Hey, guys, we just got a few more minutes to go. Actually, we're going to go just a little bit over time here. And Derek, I know you're a basketball guru, former NBA player, but I know you love football too. And we got the big game coming up this weekend, the Rams and the Patriots for the Super Bowl title. I'll be cheering for the Rams, although I don't really care who wins. What are your guys, any parties? How's your weekend going to be, Derek and Mike? And what are your thoughts on the game? I'll start with you, Derek, and let Mike finish it up.
Well, no parties, but I'm a big football guy. I actually think that the Rams can get the Patriots. And the reason I say that is because the only weakness that the Patriots have offensively is if you can get Tom Brady out of the pocket and move him around.
Yeah.
And I think the way Aaron Donald, the best thing I've seen since LT, I think Aaron Donald and Sue and Ndamukong Suh can move Tom Brady and cause some problems. So I'm going with the upset. I'm picking the Rams 38-33.
All right. Well, for me, you brought up a great name, Derek. And it's amazing how Sue has kind of resurrected his career because he was known as being a bully and dirty player and all that, and then went down to Miami and did nothing. So he could actually turn around and be the hero of the Super Bowl, which would be amazing, especially if he sacks Brady about 5 or 6 times. But as the same thing I say about the Warriors, I say the same thing about New England. Think about it. They got 5 Super Bowl wins, but they've never blown anybody out. It's always a game could have gone either way. And then the ones that they won, it was all some kind of fluke help. So they're 5-3, as I said. But they didn't have, like, San Francisco with Montana blowing teams out by 30 and 40, or even with the backup quarterback when he took over, they blew out San Diego, Steve Young. So I just don't see how, you know, people just automatically say, well, they're going to win, it's going to be easy. And then if the Rams get it done, if Gurley plays like he should and they get the running game, he gets over 100-something yards, and Goff doesn't do anything ridiculously bad, I could see them winning too, and of course I hope they win. But you know what? The leprechaun that's in Boston Garden and now the Fleet Center does go over down to Foxborough too, because these cats get some of the luckiest breaks ever in football and Super Bowl history.
Go Rams!
Mike, you killed me,
Ricky,
man.
Ricky, you know he's right, though, because all their championships have been decided by 6 points or less, all the ones they won.
Exactly. Yep.
So none of them were double figures. So he's actually got a good point.
Yep.
You know what? Hey, the Lions beat the Patriots this year and beat them easily. So I know they can be beat. And I will be cheering for the Rams this weekend. So, guys, hey, enjoy your Super Bowl weekend. Derek, anything on tap for you, man, with your program down there, upcoming shows, anything you want to share with the audience?
Well, I'm going to be doing a show this weekend. I'm actually trying to do one on Thursday and then this weekend. I'm waiting on the response from Dale Ellis so we can talk about these three-point shooters. So he was being contacted by Alvin Robertson, was actually looking out for me. So, yeah, I'll be having Dale coming on the show.
When Dale Ellis was at Tennessee, I covered them a little bit when I was in Nashville. And Dale was a low post guy at Tennessee and went to the NBA and became a guy. He could still score in the post, but he became a three-point shooter. In the NBA, you talk about a guy expanding your game. And people always talk about in the NBA, you get better in the summer. What does that entail? Is that hours a day working on specific parts of your game?
It's usually the stars. If you notice, the stars try to bring something new every year. Whether it's footwork, they learned. Kobe showed a lot of these guys the way with his work ethic. But every year, you want to try to bring something different. If you're not a person that's strong with your right hand, perfect example, Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons should be in the gym every day this summer, trying to figure out which hand he should be using, right hand or left hand. So you know, it's just something.
Wait a minute. He's in the NBA. He still don't know what hand to shoot with.
If you look at his play, Ricky, he scores most of his points around the basket, and most of them are right-handed. So if you look at his jump shot, that little 8-foot. If you look at his shot on his elbow, look at his elbow sticking out when he shoots the left hand. That is a broken shot. They talk about Lonzo Ball's shot. Look at Ben Simmons' jump shot. He'll be much more better. He'll be better than he is left-handed. I know he's right-handed. He does everything right-handed. And I just don't understand the stubbornness. How many years do you go before you expand your range? If it's not broke, don't fix it. But his jumper is broken. So he's got to be some changes. And I'm hoping he figures that out. I think he's a right-handed player.
And you are a great teacher of the game. If you had a Lonzo Ball for a summer, what would you spend your time with him doing?
Just working on his jumper. His jumper actually got better this year. He doesn't need any help on defense. He's a very good defender. He's a strong defense. But offense, he has two problems. The jumper, but it has improved, and his biggest problem is finishing at the basket.
Right.
And that's been, so far, the first 2 years, that's when he's had the most problems. is getting to the basket, taking that little contact and finishing. So I would have him just working
there?
On that, being explosive.
You know what else, Derek? He hesitates too. He'll get the ball instead of just going right up with it. You know, he'll blow LeBron's assist or somebody's assist, and then he'll do something ridiculous like try to pass into double coverage or, you know, just not flowing with the game. Like, yo, I got the rock. Nice setup, LeBron. I'm going to shoot this. You know, that could change everything when somebody throws it to you and you hesitate. That throws everything off.
Better decision making. I agree.
Because he's a pass first guy, isn't he?
Yes, it's just instinct, Ricky. That's what he's done his whole career. And then, you know, but the NBA, you got to do whatever's necessary at that time. If they need you to score, you got to be a scorer. The versatile player is the player that makes the money. That's the player that stays in the league the longest. The one that can make adjustments. Just like an 8-to-5 person that's working behind the desk 8-to-5. You're going to take the one that's the best for your company, the one that makes the adjustments the easiest. And that's just what life is about.
Yeah.
And you know what else? Bedell Ellis is apropos to have him on because his alma mater is number one. And I don't know the last time I've seen Tennessee being number one in the country. So this would be a perfect time to talk to him. I'm sure he'll have a lot of pride in talking about
that
his alma mater.
Perfect.
Oh,
yeah,
we got to congratulate you. UTSA, they had that huge comeback and made all kind of national news. So were you happy about that?
17 points down with 3 minutes and 44 seconds left.
Yeah.
I've already told the coach how I felt about it. I got to get this in right quick, Ricky. We actually have two of the best guards in the country.
Okay.
They go under the radar. We got a kid out of Houston named Keaton Wallace. He's about 6'5", 6'6", left-handed. Very good player. Has a chance to go to the next level. And then we have the guy they call the Puerto Rican Allen Iverson, Javon Jackson. you can look him up on YouTube. That's what they call him, Puerto Rican Allen Iverson. And it's ironic that his granddad, Coach George. George is 1 year in Spain. He was coached by Javon Jackson's granddad. So, yeah, check out the Puerto Rican Allen Iverson.
Wow. Maybe we can get the coach on the show one day, Derek.
The coach from the granddad?
No.
The head coach is coaching from UTSA.
Yeah.
I already talked. I just have to pencil in a date so I can talk to him, Ricky, as soon as possible. Because he already gave me assurances that he wouldn't mind coming on the show at all.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
And think about it, Mike. How are you going to turn down a man whose jersey's hanging from the rafters?
Exactly.
In the UTSA Arena.
Exactly.
You got to say yeah to that. So,
thank
you
for
get
that,
out
too.
Here. Until next week, you've been listening to the AfricanAmericanAthlete.com for Michael Robinson, our good friend Derek Gervin, and myself, Ricky Hampton. Talk to you later. Stay warm, everybody. Good night, and God bless.
Good night.
How you feel, fellas? Hey, yeah. You're getting down. Come here. Ha. We're going to have.